Welcome to the Novo Nordisk Medical Education Podcast Series, a series designed to support healthcare professionals across Ireland. This podcast is funded by Novo Nordisk, and the speakers have received financial remuneration for their participation. Today's guest is weight and obesity specialist Dr. Michael Crotty, who will speak about managing weight in a general practice setting. Your host is the National Chairperson of the Irish General Practice Nurses Educational Association, Mary Jordan.
Hello everybody, my name is Mary Jordan and today I have the very great honour of speaking to Dr. Michael Crotty on the topic of obesity management and especially for us general practice nurses in primary care. So I would love to talk to you, Dr. Crotty, maybe a little bit around the pathophysiology of obesity, the actual disease.
Absolutely, yeah, and thanks very much for having me today and giving me the opportunity to chat. As you know, I'm a GP myself, so you know I firmly believe that kind of primary care is where our patients living with obesity, you know, are going to get most of their care into the future. So it's vital that our skill and information and knowledge is as good as it can be, and it's great to see organisations that are kind of, you know, hungry for information. I know I spoke on a webinar recently about this to practice nurses and there was a huge interest. So it's fantastic to see. You know, for me, when I'm chatting to colleagues and when I'm chatting to patients, the biggest thing for me is for people to understand that obesity is not due to a lack of willpower. It's not due to a lack of motivation. It is not a lifestyle issue. When we understand the science and biology that underlies weight, we know that this is a complex issue. As far as kind of the pathophysiology and the causes for obesity, we know that our risk of obesity is highly genetically conferred. So somewhere between 40 and 70% of our risk of whether we're going to struggle with weight over the course of our life is determined in our genes. Now, genes are not destiny. You know, there's lots of other factors that impact on those from our environment and the experiences over our lifetime. But our genes really, you know, are one of the major factors that contribute to whether or not we will struggle with our weight. I think from genetics, we all know that genes are not just magic pixie dust that we kind of sprinkle on people. From a practical point of view, how our genes contribute to weight is predominantly through the brain and through subconscious parts of our brain that we cannot control by thinking. So we talk about an area called the hypothalamus. We talk about the limbic system. Again, areas of the brain that are, you know, have been around, you know, since we were cavemen and cavewomen, you know, areas that we can't control. The same area of the brain regulates our temperature. So within the hypothalamus, we have regulation of hunger and fullness. And we know in those of us who struggle with weight, you know, levels of hunger in the brain are higher. So we feel more hungry all of the time. Levels of fullness are lower, so we feel less satisfied by food. And levels of reward or kind of pleasure or the chemical reaction we get from food is higher in those of us who struggle with weight versus people who don't. Really and truly, we're all trying to play the same game. We're all given a different set of rules to abide by. And in those who struggle with weight, we are biologically more driven towards food. So naturally, over the course of our lifetime, you know, we're going to be predisposed to taking in more than our body needs. And, you know, this is not that we're sitting at home kind of eating rubbish all day long and not exercising. It's not laziness or gluttony. It's not any of those negative things that are out there in society. You know, if we take in, you know, 2%, 3%, 5% more than our body needs each and every day over the course of our life, that's going to contribute to weight. And, you know, on top of our genetics, you know, we can talk about psychology and mental health, medications that somebody might go on, you know, that influences their weight, stress, screen time, you know, health literacy, our socioeconomic group, medications we mentioned, any number of different things that contribute to weight for people. The thing I really try and get across to people is that this is a biological issue. This is not any failure on our part, and our weight is not actually within our control as much as we'd like to think.
It's very interesting when we are in practice and actually meeting our patients, how we bring up the subject of weight. Like yesterday, I had a couple come into me, one after the other. She's quite lean and she comes in and she gets her bits done. but then says to me, can you have a chat with Paddy about his weight? He needs to lose weight. He's heading down the road of cardiac problems. And he comes in and I'm talking to him about general health, and I'm doing his waist measurement and his height and his weight and working out his body mass index. But then I get into the nitty-gritty of what he's doing all day and the exercise element. So how would you recommend that we bring up weight with patients that we are seeing on a regular basis? We know that they need to address the issue, but it can be very confronting and unnerving for us.
Yeah, and I think it's certainly a challenging area when we look at kind of the research of kind of the barriers to addressing weight, you know, across healthcare. Fear of offending our patients or causing offense is one of the major barriers, in addition to, you know, I think the fear that we don't have enough time or resources, or maybe that we kind of don't feel like we have the skills or knowledge to tackle this area. But from the point of view of kind of bringing up the topic, if we do it in, you know, at an appropriate time, in the right way, without judgment, without blame or shame, it is something that is very acceptable to our patients. And in studies, it's been shown that only about 3% of patients felt that they would be offended by, you know, their healthcare practitioner bringing up weight if it's done in the right way. In fact, 68% of people who are living with obesity, you know, said they wanted their healthcare practitioner to bring up the topic. So I think, you know, it is challenging, particularly when we're busy and we're stressed and, you know, we have, you know, three patients in the waiting room and, you know, we're worried about bringing up this topic because we're going to open up Pandora's box. Really, to me, I think putting the patient at the center of the conversation is vital. You know, there are different kind of tools out there, and a lot of people have heard about the five A's of obesity management: ask, assess, advise, agree, and assist. To me, the very first one we mentioned there is the key one, the ask. So we should ask permission to discuss somebody's weight. So if I have somebody sitting in front of me and I feel it's appropriate, I'll ask their permission. If somebody's coming in, you know, about, let's say, their blood pressure or cholesterol, you know, I'll often, you know, maybe say to them, you know, obviously blood pressure is one thing that's very important for health. There's other things that are also important for health as far as our genetics, whether we smoke or not, and even our weight. Would you mind if I asked about our weight? You know, so when somebody comes through the door, we're not immediately kind of jumping on them and saying, listen, get up there and that scales and we need to weigh you, because that's not you know, that's not fair to patients. We need to ask their permission. We need to be to give them the option, because really that's the essence of kind of patient-centered care. If somebody doesn't feel they're in a place where they would like to discuss their weight, they can say no. But we've planted the seed, and maybe next time they say, oh, well, that, you know, that doctor or nurse is open to discussing weight, and maybe they'll come back again. Increasingly, I'm finding people coming into me asking to talk about weight. It's a topic they want addressed. And I think, you know, if we ask their permission and if they say they are open to talking about weight, we can ask them, you know, what has your experience been? And we can listen to their story. Once we've kind of heard kind of what their feeling are, it really gives us the opportunity to listen out for, you know, cues. Let's say, you know, they say, oh, I've done it all before, or I haven't got willpower, I haven't got motivation. We can listen for cues where maybe they're blaming themselves, or they're, you know, they feel it's their fault. And that's an opportunity for us to say, listen, would you mind if I actually kind of talked a bit about the science of weight and why it isn't a willpower issue, why it isn't a motivation issue? And people will be very, very surprised, and they'll be very, very open to that conversation, particularly when we're saying to them, look, you know, this is not your fault. People are often surprised that we'll take this approach, because they're used to, you know, doctors and nurses kind of blaming them and shaming them and saying, you just have to lose weight, you know, eat less, move more. We know that long-term eat less, move more is not a treatment for people living with excess weight. To me, you know, asking permission to talk about weight, if somebody has come in with a totally unrelated issue and it's not appropriate, you know, we don't have to always bring it up. But let's say we're seeing somebody for their chronic disease management. And, you know, we should also, I should say, ask permission to check their weight. It's not a foregone conclusion. We shouldn't assume that they're okay having their weight checked. We should say to them, you know, as part of our health check, one of the metrics we look at is weight. Would you be okay if we checked your weight today? But give them the option to say no, because it's not always appropriate and not everybody will want to have their weight checked. So I think, to me, you know, if we don't remember any of the other A's, I think the first A the ask permission is vital. And it's been shown in studies that this increases, you know, our comfort in starting a conversation, in adopting this chronic disease management approach. It's shown that it is more acceptable to both patients and healthcare practitioners. None of us go to work with the intention of upsetting people. We're all trying to pull the rope in the same direction. We're trying to help people, but we need to do it in a way that is acceptable to people. And not everybody is in a headspace where they're ready to talk about weight.
And I suppose following on from that, general practice nurses need to learn the skills and to get more comfortable with discussing the topic as well. We are now so used to doing it and making the brief interventions around other things like smoking cessation. So in your experience, what should we be doing to empower ourselves for more knowledge and therefore to empower our patients?
What is very clear to me is none of us in healthcare have had adequate training and education in this area. Certainly, I got no training in university. I don't ever remember any modules on weight. And it was only kind of, you know, in practice when I saw I was really struggling with this. And it's almost like the kind of the recovered alcoholic or the born again Christian. I've made all the mistakes that are out there to make. I have told people to just go away and eat less. I have blamed people. I have shamed them. And I've done all of those things. And now in hindsight, I can look back and say, that's terrible. But it was a lack of knowledge and really an ignorance on my part. So it's only through kind of gaining that knowledge and experience and having the conversations and getting comfortable with having the conversations that I think, you know, we can improve care. The big thing for me is starting the conversation in the first place, is asking permission, is listening to somebody's story, is kind of, you know, asking them, is it okay if we kind of impart some of our kind of information on them to, you know, to talk about why this is a medical issue, why this is not willpower and motivation. And then if somebody is open to the conversation, we can move on and we can help. We can look at maybe the underlying causes for why they maybe struggle with weight based on their history. We can, you know, carry out an assessment of the severity of the weight issue they're dealing with. We can use different tools like the Edmonton Obesity Staging System, which looks at, it's very much like the you know, heart failure staging. It's looking at kind of a number of different areas of health, from psychological health and well-being, mechanical or kind of musculoskeletal health, and then metabolic health. And if, you know, somebody's health is impaired by weight, then we can kind of stage it. And actually, it has been shown to be much better correlation with kind of long-term morbidity and mortality, you know, over body mass index. So body mass index is a helpful thing to screen for obesity. You know, if somebody has a raised body mass index, it gives us an indication that they may be living with excess weight. But our diagnosis and our definition should be based on the health impact of weight. Other than kind of looking at kind of causes and severity, again, we can look at other health conditions that might be related to weight or might be impacting on weight. And then, you know, there is the opportunity if our patients are open to, you know, the brief interventions, to talking to people about kind of things day to day that might help, you know, them manage their weight. And that can be any number of things. We do brief intervention, we do behavioral support, you know, for all other chronic diseases. And this is no different. So if we're seeing somebody for their blood pressure, you know, again, we look at things like sleep and stress. We look at their medication. We look at their levels of physical activity. and we can help them kind of develop on those things. We're very good at looking at kind of goal setting and expectations. And then, you know, around weight, we can look at other kind of, you know, interventions, whether it be, you know, identifying, you know, what are my high risk times or triggers? When am I more prone to taking in more than my body needs? And, you know, what is the situation when that happens? So maybe I'm absolutely exhausted after, you know, a day in work and I'm tired and I'm more prone to making kind of poorer food choices or kind of going for foods that are more calorie dense. So, you know, if we identify that and if we know that that's a trigger and that's a high risk time, we can try and put in place kind of, you know, strategies and routines to help people manage those things. So behavioral support is fantastic and is very, very helpful for health. You know, regardless of our size, we should all be focusing on healthy eating. We should all be focusing on physical activity. And, you know, I think we're well aware that that, you know, the vast majority of people I meet who are living with obesity are exceptionally careful of their diet. They try to be as active as they can. So, you know, it's acknowledging, you know, when I see people, you know, who are coming in to discuss their weight with me, they often start off kind of, you know, trying to tell me and convince me that they're eating healthy and they're exercising. And I have to say to them, I know you're doing that. It's not your fault. This is a genetically conferred, neurologically based, hormonally regulated, environmentally influenced chronic medical condition.
Just on that, I think that you're right, that patients are more well informed now about what actually is happening for them. And I suppose that gives us hope then as well. I presume a lot of nurses are like me, is that we are fixers. And before we would be saying the eat less, move more. But now there's such an opening out there and access to therapies that actually help. And our knowledge of that needs to increase. And that's why talking to somebody like you empowers us to get that information and therefore pass it on. But the patients are very, very knowledgeable now and have done the research before they come to us.
Absolutely. And again, most people that I meet who struggle with their weight, you know, they're very often highly successful people. They are very dedicated and diligent. They do very well in life and in business and in relationships. And they're utterly frustrated and, dare I say, pissed off that this is an area that they cannot control, because they're trying to apply the same logic. You know, if I work hard, if I'm educated and motivated, I'll be able to control this. We don't apply that same logic to any other medical condition. Telling them to eat less and move more long term is like telling somebody with depression to cheer up. It's a gross oversimplification. It's actually very insulting and stigmatizing to our patients to say that to them. Sharing an understanding of the complexity, sharing an understanding of why this is not our fault, I think is the cornerstone of anything else we do. And I think that's what I always start with. Understanding why we struggle with weight. And actually, you know, to me, one of the most interesting things is how our body responds when we're trying to lose weight. So, you know, most people that I meet will have, you know, it's not an issue with weight loss. It's an issue with losing weight and keeping it off. They will have repeatedly lost vast amount of weight and that weight comes back. So to inform our patients that the reason for that is not that they're falling off the wagon or that the diet stops working. The reason for that is because, you know, within this subconscious part of our brain, we have a set point or almost like a thermostat for weight that our body and our brain will remember our higher weight and will protect that weight. You know, it's not natural for humans to lose weight. No caveman ever went on a diet. He didn't have holidays to go on or suit pants to fit into. If a caveman is losing weight, it's because he there isn't food. So, you know, to my mind, you know, allowing people to understand that our biology is geared to resist weight loss and actually encourage weight regain is vitally important. So, you know, when I'm talking to patients, I talk to them about this set point and how our brain remembers our higher weight, so that when we're losing weight in response to that, you know, our body will increase our hunger hormones. Our body will reduce our fullness hormones. Our body will upregulate the reward, the pleasure, the dopamine, the chemical reaction we get from food. Food will look, smell, taste better. We will want it. We will crave it. We will desire it more. As we're losing weight, the rules of the game are further changing. The pitch is becoming more and more tilted against us, and we're trying to battle against that. So even if we continue to exert the exact same amount of effort, our weight will naturally rise again. And the real kicker of it is that once we get back to the weight we were before, those mechanisms don't reset. So we're now back at our original weight before we got on the merry-go-round, and we're hungrier, we're less satisfied by food, with more of a chemical reaction from food. So naturally, our weight is going to rise more. This is biology. This is evolution. This is how humans survived when food was scarce. And those of us who struggle most with our weight are the ones who are biologically or physiologically most kind of adapted towards this.
So do you see the gold standard going forward then as being the therapies where satiety is increased, hunger is reduced?
Absolutely. So to my mind, you know, I talk about this as a chronic disease like any other chronic disease. You know, somebody comes into me with roaring high blood pressure. What are we going to do? Are we going to tell him to quit his stressful job, give up salt, go sea swimming and do yoga and, you know, eat vegan and go live in the Himalayas for the next year to control his blood pressure? No, we're not. we're going to say to them, your blood pressure is very high. That's presenting a risk. There are different treatments available. We'll potentially consider a medication to bring down blood pressure. And we'll also look at lifestyle and behavioral interventions that might contribute to controlling blood pressure as well. So to my mind, you know, the exact same situation is there for weight. We know that the evidence-based treatment for weight is behavioral support, pharmacotherapy or medications, and bariatric surgery. And traditionally, we would have, you know, made people jump through 50 hoops of kind of behavioral intervention that have to do the diet, that have to kind of prove to us that they failed that before we'd offer them medication. And, you know, really, that's totally unfair. And it's kind of holding people living with obesity to a different standard than we hold people with other medical conditions. I wouldn't withhold asthma inhalers in favor of behavioral intervention. So to me, it's a case of we should be taking kind of a multimodal approach to this. We should be talking to our patients, seeing, you know, assessing what they want to do, what works for them in the context of their life. None of this is about size. None of it is about kind of, you know, shrinking people to fit into society's idea of beauty or you know, the ideal dress size or pant size. This is about health. So if we focus on, you know, the impact that weight is potentially having on somebody's health and how we can improve health, then, you know, that opens up a whole other kind of conversation.
Absolutely fascinating talking to you, Dr. Crotty, and as always, very, very knowledgeable and interesting, and I always learn something new when I listen to you speak. Thank you so much for joining us today to talk about obesity and overweight in our patients. Thank you.
Not at all. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.